Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and today we're going to hear the second part of a talk that my co-host Ryan Dobson gave at a recent event where he discussed his new book, Wanting to Believe. It was tough growing up as a son of Dr. James Dobson, and in Ryan's new book, he describes the process it took to discover if what his parents had taught him his entire life was really true. Last time, Ryan ended by discussing the importance of prayer in relationship to raising kids, and we'll pick up right where we left off yesterday. Here now is Ryan Dobson for the conclusion of faith, family, and finding an exceptional life on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
You know, my real story is after my sister was born, there were complications. My mom couldn't have kids on her own, and they didn't know what to do. And they decided to pray to the Lord for a miracle. They prayed for 4.5 years, every single day without an answer. Every day. I couldn't go 4 days without, you know, banging a gong and asking the Lord where he's at. 4 years. And there was a young couple in high school that had made a mistake, and the girl got pregnant, and the boy didn't want to have anything to do with it. He took off. She was 17. And didn't want to tell her parents, and trying to figure out what can I do? And finally broke down and told her parents, and they were thinking, what are we going to do? What are our friends going to say? I speak at pregnancy resource centers all over the country. I've heard this story hundreds and hundreds of times. Someone put in the doors of a pregnancy resource center. And I was adopted at 6 weeks of age. You know, they've been praying for us. They do it every day. All the way through high school, I'd come home late. My parents, people always think my parents, they must have been really, really strict. And they weren't. My parents prepared us to be adults. You know, my mom taught us all the life skills. I remember going to college and I couldn't believe it. There wasn't a guy I knew that knew how to do laundry, iron a shirt. I mean, every guy I knew had gray clothing from washing everything on hot, sweaters that were choking people out, and sleeves that were here, they're walking around with that confused look of something went wrong. They couldn't cook. I mean, they couldn't cook anything. I had roommates that couldn't make mac and cheese. How can you not cook? I don't even need directions. It's so silly. My mom taught me all of those things. That's helped me my entire life. My dad taught me to be a man. They gave us enough rope to hang ourselves. I didn't have a curfew if I was behaving as I got older and older. You know, we were skateboarders. We went out skateboarding and we skateboarded at the house. My goodness, our house was just a ruckus 24/7. But it was smart because my parents knew who my friends were. They knew who was influencing my life, the friend's influence. We had a skate ramp at the house and it was loud and we would get hurt and we would eat all the food and make a huge mess and they would just keep filling the fridge. And because they'd rather know where I was than where is he? It was smart. We're doing that now. We've got a bigger trampoline. And if you meet my wife, she's turning 40 on Monday. She's okay me telling that. And for her birthday, she wants a half pipe, a skateboard half pipe for her birthday. Yeah, that's right. I just can't believe that I've been skateboarding since I was 5 years old and I married a woman that's what she wants for her 40th birthday. I mean, she's perfect, literally perfect in every way. She asked me for that and I was just like, oh my goodness, can you marry me again? Right this second. My buddy Dave's flying out, we're gonna build the whole thing. But we want our kids' friends to be at our house. That's what we want at all times. And I learned that from my parents. That prayer has gone a long way. When I was in college, I went away to college for my first time to Olivet Nazarene University in Kankakee, Illinois. It's a good school. I've been back. It's a really good school. But the story is, I didn't want to go to college. I really didn't want to go to college. And I was actively working against that plan. I test very, very well, and I get very bad grades. It was embarrassing my whole life. I didn't really understand ADD or ADHD and the problems, the struggles that kids have with that. When my dad was getting his PhD, they said when kids hit puberty, that goes away. The chemistry of the brain changes. We now know that's not true. And I got bad grades, and I just didn't want to go through 4 more years of having to call my parents and tell them I'm doing bad again. And so I didn't take any college prep courses. I promise, I worked against that. I just wanted everyone to know, if you think I'm going, I'm really not going to go. I got a job, I made good money, I was happy, and I didn't take the SAT, I didn't take the ACT, any of that. And my parents were worried because they thought, maybe he's never gonna go. And my buddy Jonah, my best friend in the whole world, had signed up for the Navy. He had gone in the recruiter's office, they had promised him the world. He was raised by a single mom, she couldn't afford college. He was really smart, and I was very, very depressed. We were best friends from like the fourth grade on. We did everything together. He was a skateboarder, I was a skateboarder. I mean, we did everything. And I was depressed my senior year because he was gonna go away. And he was gonna be on a nuclear sub, so he'd be gone for 6 months at a time, and we weren't. I mean, it was gonna be the end of a friendship. And I was in my parents' room one night. My dad said, well, Ryan, if Jonah was gonna go to college, would you go to college? And I said, I don't know, but Jonah's going to the Navy, so that's a weird question. And he's like, I know, but I mean, if he wasn't going to go to the Navy and if he was going to go to college, would you go to college? I was like, I guess. And I had only looked at one school. We were near Olivet on a hunting trip, and my dad said, hey, you want to go look at Olivet? And I said, no. And I got that sigh that I now know how to do, that... And he looked over and he goes, would you go look for me? And I said, oh, sure, totally. I mean, hey, why not? We'll go look at a school. I'm not going there, but sure, I'll go look, you know? And so we went and we toured the college and we stayed overnight, and some girls heard that James Dobson was staying in the guest house, and they knocked on our door at 10:30 at night and they were like, you're Dr. Dobson. And he was like, I am. I think they screamed like college girls, ah, you know, and we toured dorms and we went to the cafeteria. They randomly opened a freshman boys dorm room door. By the way, if you ever give a tour of a college, don't ever do that. This kid had his closet door open and there was like a big poster of a girl in a bikini, and you could just see redness just go, like the guy giving the tour instantly went beet red. And he was like, oh, this is the wrong, oh, excuse me, Dr. Dobson, that's a... And then we left and we went hunting and he said, what'd you think? I said, I think it's a college. Kids were going to class and going to college. I'm still not going. But we were in his room that night and he said, well, if Jonah was gonna go to Olivet, would you go to Olivet? And I was like, I guess, okay. Sure, if Jonah went to Olivet, I would go to Olivet. And 2 weeks later, we were both enrolled in college. Yeah. And it was kind of, I gotta be honest, it was a huge shock. This was never part of the plan. And we got there early, we get there early and they were having football training camp. By the way, their field is where the Bears do off-season training. So the Olivet football team, football players in general are huge. I graduated high school at about 110 pounds. And we didn't know this, but the whole college football team was staying in that dorm. And we show up and they're like, do you need some help with your boxes? And these guys are, 6'6", 300 pounds. And they're just running upstairs with these huge boxes. And I'm looking at Jonah like, are they all like this? We were terrified. He looked at me one night and he was like, dude, I was supposed to be in the Navy right now. I said, yeah, dude, I know. He goes, your dad got me out of the Navy and I signed all the contracts. I go, yeah, I know, man. He goes, how do you think he did it? I said, I don't know, dude. He goes, that's kind of scary. I said, that's my dad. It was true. I mean, how do you do that? Normal people don't do that. If you sign up for the Navy and you sign all the contracts, then you don't show, they put you in jail for that. But I got bad grades. I thought I could do it. I thought if I really tried, I could do it. And I didn't. I tried, but the ADHD was taken over and I was depressed.
I had never lived in a place with a winter, and it was winter there forever. It snowed. The first year there, it snowed on May 8th. I turned to Joe and I'm like, it's snowing, dude. And he goes, yep, it is. I don't know why we're here. And I fooled around. I kept fooling around. And my dad would say, Ryan, this isn't our money. It's God's money. We can't waste God's money, Ryan. And I'd say, no, I'm going to do better. I'm going to do better. And I would try and I would fail. And I would try and I would fail. And I remember I called him right before Christmas one year. And he said, well, how'd it go? I said, not that good. And he goes, Rye, we've talked about this. Didn't get mad, didn't call me names, didn't yell, didn't raise his voice, didn't tell me I was lazy, didn't tell me I wasted, you know, the money he had earned. He just said, well, Rye, we've talked about this. You better find a place to live. You can't come home. That would be too easy. I'll help you with your first and last month's rent, but you got to get a job. And I did not know what to do. And I honestly didn't know if I could make it. Like, could I support myself? I didn't know. And I moved to Colorado Springs. I moved to Manitou, which is just west of here. It's a little tiny town. It's mostly hippies. At least it certainly was at that time. I also didn't know, because I wasn't that bright, that this was an incredibly depressed economy. And I mean an incredibly depressed economy. I think when folks in the family moved here, they had, I think, 300 job openings, and they got 10,000 applications. There were no jobs anywhere. And here I am, a college dropout, who barely graduated high school, trying to get a job of some kind to support myself. I lived in this old 100-year-old cottage. It had settled so far that my door, it would never have shut had they just left it alone. They just cut it off. They didn't try to it looked like Gumby's head. My door went up and then it just slanted like this. I remember every day I'd open that door and just think, this is the worst, you know? And it had a one little wall heater, and in the wintertime it would just be freezing. I'd get out of the shower and just stand in front of it with my towel, just hoping to get warm. I had an awful job. I worked in a restaurant. I worked there because a friend of mine was working there. He was gonna leave to start his own restaurant, and he talked the boss into hiring me under the table. And he said, he'll work for 2 weeks under the table. If you don't like him, let him go. If you like him, keep him on. And the boss was like, okay. And he put me through the ringer. I mean, that guy swore at us all day, every day. I heard the phrase, there's a time to lean and a time to clean, and it's never a time to lean. And just, they would call us names, but there were no jobs. I mean, when they opened, I was a busboy. I cleaned tables. I washed dishes. I swept floors. It was a non-skilled labor position, and we got 400 applications for that. We had applications from credentialed chefs that had gone to culinary arts school to be busboys because there were no jobs. And I held onto that job with all my might. You curse at me all day, I don't care. I'm gonna make money. And they'd let us take food home at night so I could eat, and I lived in that dumpy place. I worked with a 17-year-old girl and a 45-year-old woman, and they both made the same amount. I was at my parents' one day, and I said, Dad, these people are going nowhere. And he said, I know, Ryan. That's why you go to college. I said, this 17-year-old's making the same as this 45-year-old. How could you allow that? And he's like, that's what happens. He said, you want to go back? I said, well, I got to go back to work tomorrow. He said, no, do you want to go back to college? I thought that ship had sailed. I said, absolutely. He said, I'll try you out one semester at a time. You do good, you go another one. You don't, that's it. I'll never pay for it again. So I went to Biola, and I got to tell you, I got a tutor. I did everything I possibly could. And I got diagnosed with ADD, which was a great thing for me. I got on Ritalin, which I can't take anymore, but it helped me get through. But my parents did that. Can you imagine? I mean, for me, was it embarrassing to get taken out of school? Sure. In fact, it just got brought up again. I flew to Nashville this past weekend to do a thing for our books and the film series, and there's an app called Uber, and it'll call a car for you at the airport, and it'll take you wherever you want to go and tell you how much it'll cost ahead of time. So I pulled this app up, and they were giving me cars I didn't want, and I finally found one I liked, and I got this guy, and he showed up, and he drives me to the hotel, and he said, you know, this is kind of far out. You can't start this app from here to get back. What time do you have to go to the airport tomorrow? And I said, 6 a.m., and he's like, oh, that's kind of early, but I can do it. I said, oh, I appreciate it. Gave me his card. I gave him my cell number. He said, I'll text you. I said, no big deal. I get up to my hotel room. My phone rings. It's this guy, and he goes, Ryan Dobson? I go, yeah? I went to college with him at Olivet. 23 years ago. I haven't seen him since. Just randomly, I call up a car and he's the guy that picks me up. And I kind of left a little bit in disgrace. And he said, "What are you doing now?" And I think, my goodness, I'm a vice president now. That's ridiculous. I've written 6 books. I just did a film that's going to be in a film series. I'm on the radio every day with my dad. I didn't say all those things because it sounded like bragging, but I said, you know, things are going really well. And we talked about the ministry, and he listens to us, and he knows all the things that are going on. And I owe that to my parents because he could have bailed me out. The school was not about to kick me out. They weren't. That's what happens when you're Dobson at times. It's true. I've had the opposite, where you have a school that's extra disciplinarian because they want to show Dr. Dobson they're also a disciplinarian school. When I was in junior high, they suspended me for talking too much in class. 3-day suspension for talking, which I kind of wear as a badge of honor now because I get paid to do that, so. Can you imagine how embarrassing it was for my parents? Imagine how hard that is. You're in a board meeting with a $150 million organization. You're heard more than anybody else on the radio around the world. 330 million people a week are listening to you. And your friends say, "Oh, hey, Jim, how you doing?" "Oh, I'm doing good." "Well, how are the kids?" "Oh, Danae, my goodness, she's written 15 books. And, you know, it's just amazing. And she's speaking at women's events. It's just fantastic." "Well, how's Ryan?" "Oh." "Well, he was going to school, but he got terrible grades and he wasted God's money, and so we had to pull him out, and he's now in a dead-end job doing nothing, working with people that are going nowhere." I'm sure he didn't say it that way because he's very kind, but it was the truth. It's a very interesting profession to be the one that my dad's in. If your doctor's child gets the flu, you don't stop going. If your mechanic's car breaks down, you don't say, "I'm never coming here again." But my dad has gotten hundreds and hundreds of letters saying, "I saw your son, he had earrings on, I'm never gonna listen to your radio program again." I mean, I was 30 when I got my earrings, by the way. I took them out at 38, my mom cried, she was very happy. They're great role models, they towed that line. It turned me into the man that I am today. They put me through that hardship. They let me suffer. They let me struggle. They let me go broke. They let me go in debt. But they stood by me in that. They never stopped loving me. They never stopped caring about me. They never stopped praying for me. Coming home late at night, hearing them at the side of their bed, praying for my sister and I. They pray for Lauren, Lucy, and Lincoln, and myself now, and Danae. Every single day, it makes a huge difference. You know, that relationship, 54 years of marriage. Watching them, you know, they celebrated 54 years of marriage and then immediately went on vacation together. Because what else do you want to do after 54 years than spend more time together? And that's what they want. And they have a great time together. They love hanging out together. That's what I want. That's what I want. I want to believe that the things he's written are true. That if you read Dare to Discipline, that your house is going to be more calm because you've got structure for your kids and they know what you're being punished for. And it's not the mistakes. It's the willful defiance, not the immaturity. It's not the spilling of milk. It's the throwing the bottle on the floor because they're angry. I want to believe that love for a lifetime can last, that you can input into your spouse and into your marriage, and it will last a lifetime. I want to believe that. And as I get older and older and I apply it to my life, it's true. It works. Is it easy? No. It's not easy. But it's worth it. Every second, it's worth it. My mom's got a great set of parents, too. My dad did as well. My grandma and grandpa lived to be in their early 90s. They were married for over 50 years. My grandpa got cancer. He was in the hospital for a couple days. And when he got out, I went to visit him at their house. And we always go in through the back door. I never knew why, but we go through the back door. And I went through the gate, and I knocked on the back door. And it was just the screen. I could see them in the kitchen sitting with each other. I said, "Hey, Grandma, Grandpa." And they said, "Hey, Rod, how you doing?" And I came in, and they were sitting at the table, not across from each other, but literally catty corner, here and here, holding hands. I mean, it was the cutest Hallmark card in the world, this tiny little old couple just holding hands, sitting there by each other. I said, "Grandma, Grandpa, what are you doing?" And my grandma looks over. She goes, "Oh, we're just sitting here looking at each other." It's the cutest thing ever. And she said, "When my sweetie's head isn't on my pillow, I miss him. all they wanted to do. That's what they were doing. They weren't talking. They were just sitting there looking into each other's eyes. If I die with a quarter of that, I'll be successful. I'll have an amazing, amazing life. And I get that. I get it from my parents. And it's worth it. That's the message. And you can do it. You can. Cut out the busyness. The guy that was helping me to my room the other day with my bags, he said, well, you know, what are you all here for? I said, we're here for family talk. He said, what's family talk? I said, we're a ministry that helps people be better spouses and be better parents. And he said, I just got married. What's your advice? I said, time. He said, time? I said, time. Be in your wife's face all the time. Get to know her. When you have kids, get to know them. Get to know their friends. Spend time. You know, we see people in the street, they're doing stuff every night. They've got ballet and piano and Awana and every other thing every night. And they're constantly, one parent's driving these kids here and those kids there. And they're never together. They're never a family. We ate together. We had devotions together. We went to church together. We went on vacation together. We were a together family. And we're together today. Was it easy? Probably not. But it's worth it. You know, I get to have my kids. Yeah, they come this morning. I literally saw them yesterday. It's been one day. They've been with their babysitter who lets them eat ice cream and all the things I don't let them eat. And they get to watch TV and do all the stuff that, you know, I'm way too strict for that stuff. But I see him and he just comes running over. Daddy, 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 daddy. And tomorrow night, if Lucy gets scared, I'm going to be laying on that bed with her. Every opportunity I can take. And my challenge is to do the same, is to impart that, pass that baton on, give them your faith, tell them you love them. Whatever it is, let them know without a shadow of a doubt that you're there for them, because it works. God bless. Thanks so much.
What a great talk we've heard today from Ryan Dobson right here on Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and if you would like more information about Family Talk or Ryan's new book, Wanting to Believe, please call us at 877-732-6825 or visit our website, drjamesdobson.org. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hello, everyone. This is James Dobson with Family Talk, and I have a very special offer for all of you. You know, there's no higher calling as a Christian mom or dad than to teach children the gospel and to provide spiritual training within the home. But unless parents get serious about leading their families in godliness, they could grow up without a strong faith, the faith of the generations that preceded them. In a brand new collection of 8 DVDs titled Building a Family Legacy, I tackle common parenting questions and offer advice and encouragement based on the firm foundation of biblical principles. The Building a Family Legacy 8 DVD series is my gift to you to say thank you for your suggested donation of $50 or more. Now, I will accept no royalty or any portion of this donation. Every dollar will go to help support Family Talk. Request your copy by visiting drjamesdobson.org or call us at 877-732-6825. And thank you for your continued support and for listening to Family Talk.
Considering how expensive and difficult it is to be a good parent, many people wonder these days why anyone would want to even have children.
Dr. James Dobson for Family Talk.
I'm reminded of a woman who boarded a Los Angeles bus a few years ago and sat in the seat behind me. Her hair was a mess, and the black circles under her eyes revealed a state of utter exhaustion. As she stumbled past me with seven rambunctious youngsters, I asked, "Do all those children belong to you, or is this some kind of picnic?" She looked at me through squinted eyes and said, "They're all mine, and believe me, it's no picnic." The woman is right. Parenthood is an assignment that demands everything we can give it, and to do the job right requires some sacrifice and maybe even a few tears. And yet, nothing worth having comes cheap anyway. Speaking as a father, there's never been a greater moment in my life than when I gazed into the eyes of my newborn daughter, and then 5 years later, my son. What could be more exciting than seeing those tiny human beings begin to blossom and grow and learn and love? And what reward could be more meaningful than having my little boy or girl climb onto my lap, hug my neck, and whisper, "I love you, Daddy." Yes, children are expensive, but they're certainly worth what they cost us.